Last Looks crew, this is episode 80. Woohoo! Wrapping up another season. Who would have thunk? Not me. With all the main episodes and bonus episodes, I have released a total of 139 episodes since April 2020. What? With just over 100,000 downloads. Thanks, guys. That kind of blows my fucking mind. It's amazing. I appreciate you guys listening, tuning in. The support, it's awesome. And hopefully, you know, you get something out of the episodes. Hopefully they are of some help and hopefully you find them entertaining. So embracing versatility is crucial in the hair and makeup industry. My guest today is makeup artist Kieran Jackson. Kieran chats about the benefits of diversifying one's skill set to increase job opportunities. Kieran's experience in combining beauty makeup with special effects showcases the value of being adaptable and flexible in various makeup techniques. By embracing versatility, hair and makeup artists can thrive in a dynamic industry with ever-evolving demands. It is such an insightful chat with Kieran. She is a wealth of knowledge and experience, and I think she is the bee's knees. I first met Kieran while working on The Hobbit in New Zealand many moons ago, and she was one of the few people I knew when I moved to LA. I have enjoyed watching her career continue on the exciting path it's on and hearing more about her other ventures with The Makeup Refinery and her podcast, 5 Minute Face Talk. For links on all that we chat about in this episode, check out the show notes. And this is the first time I've caught one of the podcast episodes on camera. So you can actually watch this episode over on YouTube if you feel like seeing me sitting in my closet in the apartment I'm staying in while working away on location. Let me know if you would like to watch more episodes and I'll see what I can do. Just for you, my Last Looks crew. Okay, well, we have our live Q&A with wig maker Rob Pickens this weekend on Saturday, May 4th. So if you have questions for a wig maker extraordinaire, be sure to get your ticket, submit your questions, and we'll see you there. Link is in the show notes. And remember, if you fancy yourself a bit of a podcast host, pitch me your ideas. I'm looking for guest hosts to do bonus episodes or minisodes, so email me at contact@last-looks.com with your ideas, and we'll see if any of them stick. You could be our next guest host of the Last Looks podcast. Do your research though, guys. Don't pitch me ideas that we've already done on the show. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Okay, let's get on with it. My name is Jamie Lee, a hairstylist working in film, and this is the Last Looks podcast, a show where I catch up with hair and makeup artists working in the film industry around the world. And today, I'm chatting with makeup artist Kieran Jackson. On with the show.
And now, our feature presentation.
Pictures up.
Last Looks. Rolling.
And action.
Welcome to the Last Looks podcast, Kieran.
Thank you.
Now, I want you to finish this sentence for me, okay? Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Kieran, and when she grew up, she wanted to be...
I don't know. Something creative, I think. But there were so many different things. I wanted to be an astronomer. I wanted to be an entomologist. I wanted to paint. I wanted to be an architect for a long time as well. And then I think by the time I got to high school, things sort of started to fall into place with painting and involving makeup in that and through school production. So it wasn't a very literal choice, but it came in my sort of teenage years as far as makeup. So, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go back because there's one of those things that I don't even know what the hell it is and how did you know what it was as a child. So what was the list? You said astronomer?
Yep, yep.
So what was the next one?
So that's entomologist, which
What's
is
that?
The study of insects. I love insects. I love animals. So
yeah. Okay.
I remember just looking at bees and then sort of trying to work out what that was. So looking up the word and then discovering that it was its own thing and that maybe that would be something I could do. And maybe to do with working in a museum and the inner workings of bugs and stuff like that, but it never really went anywhere, obviously.
So, I mean, being Australian, there's probably all sorts of fucking freaky things you could be catching and taking home and keeping in a jar and your mum's probably like, what is happening?
Yeah, yeah. When I was really little, actually, I used to collect cicada shells. So I would every summer, and we're going to have a huge cicada outburst soon, by the way.
Oh, really?
On the East Coast. It's got nothing to do with makeup, but yeah, it's going to be like a billion cicadas are going to come out soon. So I'm very excited, but I used to collect the shells. I loved them. And I don't know what mum thought of it at the time, but yeah, it makes me realize that it actually was there quite early in my childhood. It's interesting.
Did you ever see one coming out of its shell?
Not that I can remember, but yeah, I just loved all the different colors. There was brown bakers and black widows or molly, black mollies, maybe green grocers, brown. Oh, I said brown bakers. Yeah. And now you just really get the black ones, I think. So
I've only, do you mean that the shell was that color? No, that cicada was that color.
Yeah. Just the animal.
It's funny how you guys say cicada and I say cicada.
But do you say cicada in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I remember the first time because the husband is Australian and I remember him saying it and I was like, huh? What are you, do you mean cicada? I'd never heard it pronounced differently.
Yeah, it's like tomato.
Yeah. All right.
It's the same, all that stuff.
So getting into painting and art and all that kind of stuff, like are there creative people in your family or do you know?
Not really. I did find out that my grandmother had been a dressmaker probably in the 40s, actually, 30s and 40s before she had children, which obviously was my mum. Mm. But no, not really, not at all. I was always coined the black sheep of my family, sadly, but I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean anything to me now. I was just a little different.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like you always think of black sheep as being like the naughty one or the wayward one. But I mean, if it means that you're creative, then it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned something about school productions and stuff. So talk to me about that. That's where makeup comes in?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I loved art class. So I was also pretty good academically. So there was a point where I made a decision to sort of break off from the computer studies and all of that and just go all in with art and drama and dance. And it felt like I knew inside that that's where I needed to go. And so at that point, I got in with these amazing teachers we had that would enter our school into school competitions. There was something called the Rocker Stedford 90s that we all would do these performances that were like 8 minutes long. So it's basically dance and drama set to music and you compete in the state. And that introduced me to face paint, basically. And our teacher, Mrs. Wockup, Deirdre Wockup, she was fantastic, but her husband owned a hobby shop. And so he introduced me to airbrushing. So at the age of about 15, I think I got my first airbrush.
And, oh, shit.
Yeah, found a makeup shop. And then that introduced me to things like Crayola and Aquacolor, which I still now, when I smell it, reminds me of high school and face painting and productions. Yeah. And so that kind of opened the doors to me really enjoying makeup and also knowing growing up watching movies and loving certain characters in movies and things like that. But I think looking back, it definitely, it's weird. It's like my art projects, I did makeup for them. And there's one art project that I did that was based on a famous Australian painting called 5 o'clock Collins Street by John Brack. And so it was all these kind of yellow, grey, muted faces. And so I face painted lots of my friends in class and took photos of them and recreated the painting.
Oh,
and
cool.
Within sort of cardboard masks that we'd made in class. So, and that, yeah, that was at like age 14 or 15 or something. So, yeah, it just kind of progressed from there. And I ended up doing work experience at the makeup college where I'd found the shop, which was 3 Arts Makeup Center. And, then when high school finished, I just didn't really know. I didn't know that it was something you could be paid for, but did not get the marks for the design course. I wanted to do design at university.
Yeah.
And so I just thought I'd go and be a makeup student and see what happens. You know, I finished school at 17, so I was kind of younger than most people who are a year older. And that's when makeup became a thing for me. Yeah, 17.
So did you go to, was it Three Arts? Or
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's multiple years that they have at that course?
So, yeah, back then, this was mid-90s at that point, and it was mainly a one-year course. So that was, I mean, what did they call it? It was some kind of certificate for, you know, makeup within film, television and theatre. And at the end of that year, they had introduced a new teacher to do what was the second year, and that was special effects. So I just decided at the end of the first year, funnily enough, I came very close to taking on a wig-making apprenticeship with the Australian Opera.
Yeah.
And yeah, got very close. I had three interviews. It was very grueling, and they were offering me $350 a week, and I was all very excited because that just sounded like more money than I ever had seen, you know.
Yeah.
But that at the last minute, a girl who had been a hairdresser in my course decided that's what she wanted to do, so they gave it to her over me, and I was a little bit upset, but it definitely wasn't where I was supposed to go. And so after that happened, it led me to choose to go back to the second year and do special effects. So I did that with Rick Connolly teaching, and yeah, that was 30 years ago.
And did that, like, moving into doing more of the special effects focused stuff, did that kind of trigger something as well to be like, oh, this is amazing? Or like how, or did you already know that because they'd touched on it in the first year?
I think I definitely knew that I loved creature makeup and fantasy makeup. I love body painting and you know, in the 90s, I wanted to work on a Marilyn Manson video. Like, that was just the ultimate, like, creating textural sort of painterly images seemed like a dream job to me. And I was also aware of how young I was, and definitely had a lack of self-confidence in the grown-up world, if that makes sense. So we would have these amazing guest teachers that would come in that were, you know, the top-level makeup designers within Australia. And I can remember Viv Metham, who is a legend in Australian makeup. She's such a great lady. But she came in one day and I was just sitting there probably drawing on my little sketch pad or something. And at that point, I also wanted to be a director. So I remember her saying to me, because she could see I was the youngest in the class, but asked me how I felt about makeup. And I was like, oh, I think I really want to be a director. And she said, well, that's creative too. Like, you know, this is all very creative. But that was just me going through some little whim, I guess, still being a teenager. So I think, and to get back to the question, that I just knew that I had some time to live and to grow a bit before it was meant to flourish in terms of my career, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Or in needing to make any type of solid decisions, like you're still
working. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Do you still think about directing or no?
No.
I wondered if you're, like, on set looking at what directors are doing going, I could do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I do think that, yes.
I think we all do at some point.
You're God.
What the fuck are they thinking?
I know. All the time. No, not all the time. But absolutely, that thought has run through my head so many times. But or just that you could do it better or quicker or more effectively.
Yeah.
Or just show the creature or show the makeup effects, because they never show them. Or they film the gag last in the night and when everyone wants to go home. All of those things. It's like, come on, guys. Who put this show together?
Always with the gag at the end of the night. And at the end of the day or night being like 4 o'clock in the morning, and then they're like, come on, rush, and you're like,
and then the sun's coming up, and it's always the same.
Why?
Yep.
Anywho, okay. So you come out of that course, and then, like, how do you get into what you get into? Like, are you looking at that, and at what point are you thinking about television and film? Like, is that what you're thinking about when you first go into that course, or are you just thinking about, I want to learn how to do the makeup, but you don't know what for?
I think everything, and also being such a baby. And, you know, I can remember going to makeup college, and I'm from the Northern Beaches of Sydney, so it's a little far removed from big urban cities, you know, driving across the Harbour Bridge for the first time. So suddenly feeling a sense of independence, but still being such a kid. So, but definitely thinking about it. But it was, I mean, I was very lucky very early on. We had these amazing teachers, like I said, and another one was Nikki Gooley. And so to answer your question, we would be able to meet these incredible guest teachers and lecturers. And so she was on a project, I think, maybe in 97 or 98, and they just needed help with some really funky background. It was like a kid's sort of futuristic sci-fi romp thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tim Curry was in it, which was pretty cool.
Oh, my God.
But I never got to meet him. But so we came along, we did some tattoos and funky hairstyles and things like that, and she could only pay us, you know, petrol money and give us lunch. So, but I was just happy to be there and get to see the inner workings of a pretty large film production. And going back to the high school stuff, like it's just the right environment. It just felt right as far as where I was supposed to be. And, you know, working just in this creative field. So it just felt very buzzy and exciting. But so she couldn't afford to pay us properly with the budget on the show. And so I will never forget, she said to me, "Karen, I promise I will get you on the next project that I do." Mm. And probably a year or so later, the next project she did was The Matrix. So at a very young age, I got to work on this massive, you know, offshore movie that ended up being what it's become. And so that was the first time that I really got a proper view to what these big shows are like. And it just blew my mind. We filmed right in the center of Sydney, days and nights. We drove cars through Martin Place, had cameras on the top of high-rise buildings. And, you know, there I am in this hideous nightclub. I don't even know if it's still in Sydney. I think it was called Black Market.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was a very smutty club where you'd walk in. I never went there when it was open for business.
All right.
No, I promise you, my shoes are probably still stuck to the floor. Like you would walk in and go up the steps and you'd have to peel your soles off the floor because they are so sticky. But, yeah, so there I am watching this take, you know, doing all the grungy, grotty sort of sleazy background extras. I've never had seen more latex dresses in my life than one place. But and there's Keanu Reeves like just across the room for me. It was really amazing. So at that point, I definitely knew that this was where I wanted to be. And at the same time, though, it was really difficult in Australia because you do have to be a hairdresser and a makeup artist, as I know you've talked on the show so many times with your English and Australian and New Zealand guests. And I definitely was not a hairstylist and had no desire to learn hair. So at the same time, learned very early on that if I wanted to get work full time, that was something I had to overcome or address in some way. So I did that by about 1999, I think.
What did you do?
I moved to Melbourne. I decided to take a course, which was an intensive one-year course that basically saw you come out as a Certificate 3 hairdresser.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I did that, and about 2 or 3 months into that, I was up to hair colouring, which I loved, and I loved everything that I learned to that point. When the phone rang and it was Leslie Vanderwalt to ask me to come and join the team on Farscape, so a little TV show called Farscape. So
and you're like, "See you later, suckers. I'm fucking out of here."
Well, I mean, I left my locker with all my little dolly heads in it, and off I went, and I never went back, sadly. Yeah. But I still use the skills that I learned to this day. I still cut hair. Everything is so needed and still so relevant, and especially having meandered into kind of hair technician work and, you know, the styling of punched work that I do and wig stuff that I do. So it's interesting how it's all evolved, for sure.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay, amazing. So was that full-time on Farscape?
Yes, yes. So that would have been my first like proper full-time job. And I think I was 21 or 22 then. So still a baby, you know.
Yeah. How long did that go for?
Many years.
Yeah.
So that was end of season one that I joined the team. Did season two in the makeup department, still doing the Zan makeup. And then I think season three was when Dave Elsie and Lou Elsie sort of poached me over. Yeah, so Dave and Lou sort of picked me up and dragged me on over to the Creature, or they're just called the Creature Shop, I think, for that show. And that's when I finally felt like everything had fallen into place as far as me being the right age to be in amongst the world of special effects. And I think by that point I was probably 23 or 24 years old. But I'd already had many years of exposure to being on set and how it all worked, but that's where I needed to be for sure, I think, yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. Did you ever work in the workshop?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, what was so great about that job was it was primarily with Dave and Colin. So I came in to kind of assist them with the makeup applications. Mm. And so we had a couple of regular prosthetic characters, and then I would go on set with those characters to maintain them all day while they went back to the shop, and Dave would run the department and Colin would run the foam lab. And so it was a really, I mean, a bit like joining Leslie and the team in season one, it was this, I mean, no better training ground for a young artist. Hmm. Where you're in it and you're doing it, but you're still exposed to learning so much more. So I would be on set with Scorpius, played by Wayne Pygram, which was fantastic because it was this sort of three or four piece vinyl makeup with the foam latex helmet over the top. That was a big part of you know, my working week.
Yeah.
And then I'd just kind of push myself into coming into the shop on days we didn't have characters playing, and that became really vital for my growth and learning because I just kind of pushed myself in there and I was like, teach me how to seam, teach me how to paint. And Lou taught me how to hair lay. So I'm learning these incredible skills from some of the best people that are doing it. You know, Lou, not many people know this about Lou, but aside from being such an incredible fabricator and costume designer, even prior to Farscape back in the UK, is her hair laying or fur laying skills. She just does the most beautiful eyebrows. And so that's where I learnt that sort of fine art that is making eyebrows and hair laying, fur laying, sorry, eyebrows. And then learning to paint from Damien and, you know, just so many things. So, and also I'm going to talk about this a lot these days, but being exposed to all these people at that age, I would talk a lot about Dick Smith, who by that point was probably in his mid-70s, I think. And so I finally summed up the courage to write to him and introduce myself, which took, like, I just didn't do it for years because I thought I wasn't very good and all of these things. So finally did that and told him that I wanted to do his course. And he basically rejected me because he obviously was very close to Dave and Colin, and they had a lot of correspondence where Dave would send him their makeups from the show on Farscape because we had guest characters, you know, makeups, animatronics, full puppets, and then a combination sometimes. And Dick was just in awe of the collective work that they produced on the show and that the team produced. So Dick rejected me. So I never got to do his course while he's alive, which I'm a bit sad about now. But in a way, it was a lovely form of flattery. He basically told me I had everything I needed to learn right in front of me, which was true. Yeah.
He's like, why would you waste your time coming over here when?
Well, it was all correspondence.
Oh, I see.
So it was by letters at that time.
Oh,
I think
I
just had an email account. So email, you know, correspondence with him, but he would send it out to me. So it didn't involve any sort of traveling. But so that's
interesting. Amazing. Well, I mean, did you take it like that immediately, or were you just like, I don't know, felt the because you're using the word rejection.
Well, I think it's, I wear that a bit like a badge of honor now.
Yeah.
You know? It's like John West. but No, I mean, it wasn't a rejection. I certainly wasn't hurt or anything. Yeah. But, and Dick, he didn't mince words. You know, he would tell something as it is. And I have to say, I think that's something that's really missing in our community now. We need a new Dick Smith. We need someone that has that sort of gift of the gab to just be able to tell you that you should give up, that you're, and obviously I'm not talking to you or I, but people need to hear the truth sometimes. And I think nowadays we're frightened of upsetting people, and there's a fine line to tread with regards to the political correctness and the extremities of it that we're faced with today. But some people shouldn't be doing this that want to, you know, and I mean, wouldn't it be better to tell them straight away and save them the time? Or if they have potential and they could go further, to tell them so, like, you need to work harder or, you know, there's nobody filling those shoes anymore.
Yeah. True. Or to just go in a different direction. It's just you might want to go in that direction, but your strength lies somewhere else. And if someone else can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, oh my goodness, it was heartbreaking to watch. But when I did my makeup course, there was a girl on that, I mean, yeah, just to say it bluntly, she was terrible.
Mm.
And across the board, like, everything was pretty bad.
Mm.
And we had to, at the end of year, like, go in and have a, I don't know, it was like some type of discussion thing with our portfolio. So go through it all and get, like, the constructive criticism and the this and the that and, like, talk it all through. And, yeah, I mean, she just pretty much came out just bawling her eyes out, because I think, thankfully, hopefully, the tutor was just like, listen, like, had to have that conversation with her. Yeah. Like, I just don't know if you've got it in you to be able to do this. Like, you can, I mean, you know, who knows? She may have been able to, like, practice and like, be able to get somewhere, but it just naturally, there wasn't a flow there at all for any of it. Like, it was so heartbreaking to kind of watch, because she wanted to do it so badly, but it just wasn't there.
Yeah, but I think that's quite interesting, because that might have been what she needed to hear to prove it to herself that she could actually do it. And I think that's what I was meaning with Dick as well, because then you get that poke, you get that person saying, you know what, this is no good. You really need to work on this or give up. And then that forces you to go away and self-reflect and go, oh my God, I love this so much. And, and also on a sort of different tangent, being able to recognize with your own eye that something isn't great too. So developing that critical eye. So especially when you're starting out, to be able to see it in yourself, like, oh my God, this is really shit. You know, it's like, I've got to do something. I've got to get better. Interesting.
That's awesome. So how, I don't know how the industry in Australia is different now than when you were starting out, but I mean, if it's anything, well, it's probably a bit busier than New Zealand because it's a bigger place, but it kind of would be ebbs and flows, like stuff would come in waves. So did you find yourself being able to actually work full time all the time, or were you out of work for a bit? Like, how did you handle all of that?
Yeah, definitely. So once Farscape was a done thing, so they did 4 seasons of that I worked on, and then they did a 4-part mini series that I chose not to work on full time because I wanted a break, and actually went back to 3Arts and taught for a little bit, which was wonderful too. That was 2004 by that point. But I think it was that real harsh reality of missing out on the makeup jobs because of not having the hairstyling qualifications. But I also knew this is a good 10 to 15 years into my career, I was never going to be a hairdresser. It was just not in my blood. I love a lot of aspects of hairstyling, and I love how collaborative the two forms are and how they go hand in hand, and they have to go hand in hand, but at the same time it just wasn't what I was supposed to do. So I think that combined with my love of the special effects side of it, it was just all these little signals that are pushing me towards that more creative, and that's not the right word, but the more three-dimensional side of makeup was what I'm drawn to the most, and more character work as well, which oftentimes does involve, you know, appliances as well as you know, out of kit makeup. So I think in terms of work each year, there were definitely slow periods, particularly in the sort of early 2000s, and having that realization that to be working and to be paid pretty well at the time, you would have to rely on the big offshore shows to come over. Yeah. So there was a couple of slow periods. And I know even by the time I'd left Australia that there was, do you remember there was that time that people were just leaving in droves? Like they were upping their families and moving to England because they couldn't pay their mortgages and they had to sell their houses because everything stopped going to Australia. Right. And I think looking back, it was probably to do with the exchange rate and the strength of the dollar. And I can't remember specifically when it was, but I was over here and I was just shocked. So there is that sense that when you're there, you have to rely on the choices that these producers and these studios make to film there. And I think that the time for that is very much now, because of how tumultuous things have been here in the US in the last, you know, year because of our negotiations, and in the last 4 years because of COVID, et cetera. It's pretty tumultuous time, isn't it? But I would have thought that New Zealand would be quite busy at the moment as well, though.
I think it is now. It's just when I was there, it was definitely, you know, you go months and months and months and months without anything.
Yeah.
So I would always hit this weird thing that would happen that it was almost at breaking point where I got to the point where I was just like, I'm never going to work in film again. Like nothing's going to come here. And it would get to that point of almost tears of going, it's never going to happen again. That then the next day the phone would ring.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, oh, thank fuck.
Yeah, I know, so, and it's still happening to me to this day.
Oh, God.
Me in January going, okay, Karen, you're almost 50, but it's time to have a new career. it's just such a, like, clash of emotions, and, you know, you get this great job that goes for 6 months and then all you can do is think about having a holiday, and then the job finishes and then you're forced to have a holiday. I mean, this is sometimes, obviously. Mm. And then all you can do is think about being on the next job, kind of thing. And, I mean, just being at the beck and call and all the whims of these decision makers is just such a – it's not my favourite part of the process at all. It drives me crazy to not have – total control over your career at certain points. There's something I wrestle with a lot.
Yeah, it's tricky. Absolutely. Yeah. So looking back on all the amazing things that you have done, Karen Jackson.
Oh, thanks.
what are three absolute favourite projects and why? And for any reason, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah. I had to go through the old IMDb account to remember. I'm like, what if I do again? But firstly, and it's only because it's still quite fresh in my memory, I have to talk about Oppenheimer because, well, first of all, I am a massive movie fan and fan of Christopher Nolan. So to get that phone call the first day that Louisa Abel called me about it, I just nearly just fell off the bed. because I was just in bed when she called.
Copy that.
I'm kidding. my heart's starting to skip a beat now thinking about it. I just didn't know what I had done to deserve that opportunity. And, you know, she talked about the makeups that I would be involved with and the aging and, you know, background, whatever. And I was like, I'll do whatever you want. This is great. And then following through to actually doing it and then finding this role within her room doing Killian's aging makeup with her and sometimes Becky Cotton each day was just like I mean, and getting back into aging makeups, which I hadn't done in a long time, yeah. was just brilliant. And to be in that world and working our little butts off all day, every day. And you remember the hours that we would do. And I just remember being so shocked that the entire, you know, ensemble cast all breaking their turnarounds and still showing up with a smile on their face. And I look at it now, like everyone just wanted to stand taller. You just had this sense that you were very fortunate to be there. And there was a quiet pride. I mean, I'm so lucky. And that's definitely probably the highest point for me so far in terms of feeling like I've contributed towards something that I'm really proud of. So, finally getting to work with you, Jamie, after.
I know, it's ridiculous.
After how, I mean, what was it, 2011? Yeah, so what was that?
What was 2011?
The Hobbit.
Yeah, but we worked together on Pirates in 2015.
Oh, yeah.
For a little minute.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but we hadn't done anything really the States together.
That's right. That's what it was. Yes.
Yeah.
So even that, I just remember, we were filming in that, was it like a church or a school in Pasadena? And, you know, they were filming upstairs. It was the Rad Lab scenes. And I came in and you were just sat on the bench downstairs. I was like, Jamie, can I sit for a minute? Because you can't sit on his set while they're filming.
Yeah.
And I remember just sitting down and we were just like, oh. Just commiserating in our knee pain or something.
Pretty much.
But yeah, I just remember acknowledging that moment because it was just so lovely to work with you after so long. So many things. But yeah, so that is definitely a high, very high point. And then another one would have to be a little show called Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, yeah.
And completely different type of show and style and all of the things, completely contrasting to Oppie. But for me, I've also been a bit of a fan of all Taika's projects that he directs and has written. So to be sort of up close and personal with the inner workings of that world was really fun. And to get these scripts, I've never been more excited to receive the scripts because they were just such a joy to read. And the wonderful showrunner, David Jennings, just brought to life something really special and new. And it was a crazy show. We shot each episode over about 5 days. And some days we would film 10 pages of script. I mean, it was just super fun. And we had a wonderful cast, like all the pirates that were in the crew on the boat. It was just really special, but so exhausting. And then I'm just jumping all over the place now. And then the third one I just have to say would probably be another different set of reasons as well, but that would be Prince Caspian. And that's because that's where I met my husband.
Yeah. Yay, romance. Yeah.
But that was also a crazy job too. And on that show for Howard, I probably worked the longest hours that I've ever worked. So they are all pretty nutty jobs, I guess, in that way. But I remember one week looking at my time card and adding up the hours, and it was 122 hours that I'd worked. And I remember looking at it and going, well, how many hours are there in a week?
Yeah.
And so I just did the maths, and there's 164 hours in a week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and we worked 122 hours. So it's like you just have to look at that. All the girls were – everyone had a cry.
Be illegal.
Yeah. Well, we're in the Czech Republic, so yeah, that's okay. That kind of solves that problem.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We would fantasize, and I'm being very serious, we would fantasize at having a turnaround bigger than 6 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy. How long did that go on for?
Oh, too long.
That is the correct answer.
No, I think it was about 6 or 7 months.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't always 122 hours.
No, but
yeah. And I think it just came, the bigger sort of demand was that the director wanted everything on set every day. And, I mean, the shop build for it was just mind-blowing. We had over 100 characters, I think, most of the time about 80 makeups on. So fauns and centaurs and the big ones in the suits and minotaurs, is that what they were called? Yeah. There's all sorts of things with hoofs.
Yeah, hoofs and horns
yes.
all over the place.
Yeah, so it's pretty wild.
That's amazing. And just to clarify for those listening, Kieran's husband is Kevin Wozner, who I think he was, this is going to be wrong, but I think he was episode 16 on the podcast.
I know it was really early on in the...
Some number. Yeah. Anyway, you should it go was listen a number. To that too, because these two are like, ridiculously talented fucking married couple.
Oh, yes.
Found each other and, it's pretty cool lady. I love it.
Yeah. So, that would be favourite shows that just come to mind right now for very different reasons, for sure. But there's so many, I don't know, so many different reasons for having fond memories and, you know, whether it be the people that you work with or the work that you do or the actors that you get to do it on or the director or the location, you know, there's just always these wonderful experiences to come out of the work we get to do, you know.
Yeah. So is one of those your most challenging project as well?
I mean, those funny. Hours sound I like think it. I think they probably all are as well. And I was thinking about this too, the fact that there's like a real direct correlation is that I love the thrill of the challenge. I mean, it's probably quite unhealthy of me, but the harder the job, the more I get out of it and the drive is stronger. And it's probably not healthy or advisable. So anyone listening, don't listen to me.
I think very unfortunately normal in this industry because it's just how a lot of us function.
Yeah.
So,
it's just that sense of reward of getting through it, you know, and resolving things, I think. But, I mean, Oppenheimer, I mean, it was rough, but in just such a brilliant way, you know, physically. And creatively, I just loved it so much. I was so happy. And same with Our Flag Means Death, but yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And what about a favourite look that you've created? So favourite character, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, I think I knew at the time getting to apply the Zan makeup on Farscape. I mean, it's still such a beautiful design Leslie came up with. And I think Dave Elsie had involvement too. So just to get to do that, I mean, I definitely wasn't responsible for her look, but I got to put it on Virginia Hay, I think 400 times I worked out over the years.
Yeah. My God.
So that would definitely be one. I also really love a makeup that Kevin and I did together that was originally to be part of one of Todd Debrecini's makeup books. And so that was this goat character that we sort of came up with the look together, came up with the concept and got his life cast thanks to the team, the boys at K&B. This is while we were on Walking Dead, so we would work on it on the weekends. And, so Kevin sculpted it and then shipped it back to LA from Georgia and K&B again, you know, we were working, so it was sort of impossible a task to have it molded and run the pieces while we're in Georgia. So it was this back and forth and applied it on the fellow that we had designed it on, which is Stephen Vining, one of our go-to walkers at the time. And it was just really fun. And Kevin and I worked together so well and know each other's sort of strengths and weaknesses and just had a great time with it, and I got to do all that sort of grungy hair work on him and all the punching on the face and body, and, it was just super fun. And I just love the chest that Kevin came up with. It's just like all the teats on it it's a bit fantasy, a bit sort of grimy, grotty goat fellow. Yeah, so that's another one definitely.
Pretty cool. If you want to check it out, it's on your Instagram, right?
I think
that's where
so.
I saw it.
Yeah,
I think it is. It's pretty amazing. So younger you, starting out in this industry, what advice would you give young Kieran? Don't do it.
To myself? Oh, goodness me. That's really hard. That, I think you've got me there. I'd probably just say, just be patient, keep going, hang in there.
Yeah.
You know, in the last few years, I and this is the truth, I've gotten to work with some of my most favorite directors, my most favorite actors, mm-hmm. just in the last couple of years, having done mm-hmm. this for 30 years. So some things yeah. take more time than others. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, you know, when I talk to all these amazing young people coming out of college now and coming out last year and the year before, like brand new artists that are just full of drive and ambition and all those things that I had once.
Yeah.
That tend to fade over time as you get more familiar with the inner workings and the unfortunate cynicism that can arise over the years, is just like, just hang in there and keep going, because not all opportunities present themselves at the same time or early on, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, for sure.
And I feel like you've probably touched on it, but I'm going to ask anyway, what do you find most rewarding?
Probably the doing, like the yeah. physical act of doing the work, using yeah. a paintbrush in my hand, and it's just that hand-eye coordination and also the working with the actor as well, which is something that honestly I used to be quite terrified of starting out. It probably was to do with age and not being very confident.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's probably my favourite thing. But I love the whole process. I love there's like that electricity that goes through. For me, it's kind of sad, but like when you get the job and you're like, okay, I'm doing this, and
why is it sad? That's not sad. Stop
it. I don't know. I feel like I'm the only one that thinks that way. But it's just, you get so excited about the project and you start thinking about things straight away. And sometimes I'll get some books out or start looking at older movies by the same director, whatever it is. It's always different, but
yeah.
it's that instant, like, yes, you get to start on something fresh. And then reading the script, if the script is a solid script, I love to read the script. If you have time, I mean, if you get the script really with short notice, then it's a nightmare because you're like, okay, I'm just taking notes. I don't get to indulge in the read. Yeah. So yeah. sometimes it's not so, yeah, indulgent. But I love it all. I love it all. Yeah.
So going back to your research and like finding inspiration, what are your sources normally? What do you go for?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I love books. And I mean, between Kevin and I, we have a lot of books across really wide sort of fields, from architecture to Italian Renaissance art to his love of Clive Barker or whatever it may be. So I do love to look at this, that tactile thing of looking at books and smelling books and looking at artworks, and yeah. nature is another big one, depending on what I'm doing. But also, I mean, you have to, unfortunately, you have to acknowledge the convenience of the internet and what we hold in our hands, because you might be sitting on set and have to come up with something for the next day. So
yeah.
Something that I think has become quite effective for a team is using Pinterest, where you can share the albums or whatever they're called. The boards on Pinterest is quite time efficient. But I do like to go outside of the internet, because I just always feels like you can get your bog standard, you know, 1940s images off Google, and you know, it's like you want to go deeper than that. And I did want to mention, I know you had Chris Clark on the show a few years ago, and I love Chris Clark and his love of research and context. And he's the one that taught me about using high school yearbooks, which he loves to collect.
Yes.
And I think that's brilliant, because I love the idea, aside from getting like perfectly contextual images of real people, you can hone them into to 1 year. So if you're doing a project that's just set in 1957, then you can find that all together for that age group, if it is school kids. So stuff like that, where it's actual contextual books or magazines. Magazines are great too. I did a project called Air with Louisa Abel again last year or the year before, and so she would bring in all these big, they were massive, but just the women's beauty magazines. And that, again, it just came to that smell of the paper that they printed on. But it was just so funny to read them because you have cigarette ads on almost every single page and all these un-PC things that you would never see advertised now. And it just helps put you in the right place, you know, and going way bigger than just looking at an eyeshadow or a lip shade, you know. Yeah. And I think all of that helps to contribute to creating a feel for the work and the characters, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what I've started noticing absolutely on the Google side of things is that there is definitely AI stuff spotted through shit now. Like if you, I think I did something the other day of like 19 whatever something rather. I think it was like teenage girl hair, early 60s. There was obviously AI pictures in there. I was just like, shit, like this is it's so tricky.
Well, yeah, and the thing about that is I feel like we should all be trying to learn about what goes into those images, because once you know what an AI image looks like, you can really, you see the formula for it. It's like the lighting, they just stand out to me. There's just something so formulaic and pedestrian about them, where the lighting is, it's just too perfect and too uniform. And someone had, there's a post going around on Facebook recently about, I don't know if it was an architect or a building company or something advertising. And there's this beautiful looking structure, you know, with vines coming down the front, and it just looks too perfect. There's no soul to it, and there's no life or history or, you know, imperfections. And there's just nothing interesting aside from it not even being a true source of reference, you know. Yeah. So you just need to really have a critical eye. Again, I keep sort of coming back to that phrase, but, yeah, that's such a good point. So you just can't trust anyone, Jamie, can you?
that's this takeaway.
Trust no one.
Don't trust anybody. Especially Uncle Google. He's fucking sent you down the wrong path.
No, one that also is that Uncle Google, he knows you and he knows what you like to search. So he's already making decisions for you. So say goodbye to Uncle Google and go down to your library and pick up some good old fashioned books, because you can trust those.
Yeah, exactly. You know, for a while at least. Until those start getting all messed up. But it's going to be interesting in the future. Well, now that so many magazines are not being in print anymore either.
Yeah.
So
that's
kind of dumb.
I know. Everything, I think in the last 10 years, and then obviously in the from now onwards, everything has changed so much in the world, not just within our field, of course, but it's a time of big change and exponential change too. I'm so glad I got to grow up when I did.
Yeah, me too. So tell me, what does stepping out of your comfort zone on a job look like for you?
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. I think for a long time I was scared of ladies, like scared of doing ladies' makeup.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's only because, you know, at a certain point in my career, I got into the whole special effects world and prosthetics and, you know, Star Wars movies and science fiction and aliens and zombies. And you do this thing for so long that you do one thing one day a year that it's like, oh, I've got to get back on the bicycle again. So I think I created that in my own head a little bit. It's definitely gone away now. And the second I get back on a period show, I'm like, oh God, how do I do this again? But I love beauty makeup and I love skincare, and those two things go hand in hand, of course. And it's just weird the insecurities we can allow ourselves to create. But I don't think it is
weird, because I mean, if you are doing, you know, if you do like even just one whole job where you're not doing any beauty makeup at all. Like I used to get like that when we were doing things that it was just like tan, dirt, sweat, you know, on dudes or whatever. And it's just like, oh my God, I'm going to forget how to put red lipstick on. Like it's I'm going to lose, you just get a little bit out of practice, I guess. But for you, because you did so many special effects stuff, like has ever been a conscious choice to try and focus more on beauty stuff?
I think that point definitely came for me in the US when I got in the union. Mm. So I, and all you young kiddos out in California, is another reason to be patient, because that is a, it's like a lottery whether you get in your first year. It took me 10 years to get into the union after I'd already been a very well-established makeup artist in Australia. So at that point when it happened and I got in, I knew like straight away I have to be able to do everything, because I want to be accessible to as many opportunities as possible. So straight away I just upped my beauty kit. I made sure that I had a lovely range of foundations and palettes and lipsticks and all these things that I might not have had much of beforehand. And so I was lucky enough to get a couple of jobs with Erin Kruger-McCash early on in my union days. And she's just so trusting and would basically go, here you go. And so you're doing 1940s makeups every day. And so before I knew it, because I'm doing these things day in, day out without allowing myself to question, oh God, I haven't done a red lip in 7 years, you know, to not allow yourself to question whether you can do it or not, but to just do it. For sure. And then once that happened, I was like, oh, I can do this. And actually it's kind of a lot easier than a 5-hour makeup where you have edges all over someone's face. And I'm not saying that is the case, because it isn't always, but for me, I had to put it in perspective where I'd been sort of scrutinizing my own skills that maybe weren't necessarily lacking, but that just had been put to rest for a few years prior. So yeah,
you're kind of a rare breed, because I hear like even on the job I'm on now, like the makeup head of department is just like, oh, you know, I just really, when we were first talking about crewing up and all that type of stuff, and she's just like, I really feel like I need someone that can strongly do both.
Yeah.
And she's just like, but they, she's just like, where do they live? Like, who are those people? And you were the person that popped into my brain. I was just
well, that's so nice.
Know, Karen Jackson does that. Like, but then it's just like, who else does that? Yeah. So just knowing that you have a strong grasp from one end to the other is, yeah, I don't think a lot of people have that. So,
oh well, that's so nice. Thank you. I love that you thought of me. I don't know. I don't think there are many people either. And I, so me, it's just about being able to solve problems, isn't it? And I love having the knowledge to solve any problem that comes up on set, because that's what I'm there for. I love the hard work. I love the challenge. And I think that you can solve everything that comes up. And so, it's just the sum of the last 30 years, I think. And also coming from Australia, where you had to do everything. There was no choice. And then sort of incorporating the facial hair, you know, lace pieces and my hair punching and all of those skills that are usually more workshop related into an on-set capacity is something that's been so beneficial for me over the years, even more recently as well. And that's something I try to teach the young students that I talk to, is that how different times are right now. And I know I keep harping on about that, but even to, you know, this is the heyday of makeup effects in the 80s and 90s, where particularly in America, things became so segmented and departmentalized or compartmentalized, is that to be able to offer yourself in even just two different aspects of makeup, you're not only offering up, you know, your use on set and how much you have to offer, but you're opening up your capacity for earning money, right? And that's what we're all trying to do at the end of the day. So I try and look at it that way now, where it's like diversifying, right? And that's the big word these days. So think of it selfishly as well. Diversify where you can make money. And that's pretty much what got me through the years of COVID and last year with the strikes. Most of the work I did through last year was all making wig pieces and hair punching and things completely outside of movies and TV. So it's just, I don't know. So it's a good lesson for myself, and that I like to share with the young'uns, is that just, you know, that whole thing about jack of all trades, master of none. It's like, I used to think that that was really true when I was younger.
Yeah.
And believed in it. Now I'm like, nope, you can be very well skilled in two or more things if you want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not 50, but yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to be 50,
Exactly. No,
I mean, just two things.
yeah, it's so true. I didn't really notice. Yeah, I mean, that's what that came out all backwards. But when when I did really notice when I moved to the States how specialized things were. That there were people who only do this or only do that. It was the first time that I had heard that people in the hair department that you have a barber come in to do something. Yes. And I was just like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what?
I know.
What can a barber do that you can't? So it's, yeah, it's quite fascinating. But it's, I guess, there's just the people and the work, and there's enough that you were able to specialize in something and maybe get enough work. But I think to be safe, it really is better to, as you say, have more than one thing that you can do strongly and confidently and well.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And I mean, I don't think it's for everyone for sure, but for me personally, it's just about being versatile and having a flexibility and, you know, being on a show like The Walking Dead, where so many other skills came up, where I was like ventilating or hair punching at the last minute. And even something that came up one season where we had a character who she had a little cut or something. And so they had to put stitches on the makeup every day. And so I came up with a lace piece that had the stitches in it so we could just, tack it on for the stitches, because it saves you having to mess about with individual threads and just being able to be flexible. I can't think of the word that I'm trying to use. Resourceful. There we go. Mm-hmm. And that just only takes time, doesn't it, to be able to apply. But then having said that, isn't it wonderful when you're on a show and they can bring in barbers? I mean, that was also very new to me quite recently. And I have nothing against people specializing for sure, because usually they're the ones at the top of the field. But that's just not, it's not the way things have panned out for me. So I do love the combination of beauty makeup and prosthetics as well. I think that's just such a wonderful fine art. And I love when those rare occurrences happen.
Where it all is. Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah. You know what I want to talk about now, Kieran Jackson?
No, what?
I want to talk about the makeup refinery, and I want to understand. Oh. I want you to explain to everybody what it is and where they find it and why it happened and how it came about and all of those things.
Oh, yes, I'd love to. Oh, that sounds so hammy. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you.
Ham it up.
I'm not a very good salesman, so I'll probably get all nervous now. No. But, so the makeup refinery has become my own side hustle, I think. So in a similar realm to you with Last Looks, where, and it started for me in COVID very early on. Mm. I was at home one day and I had a kind of internal meltdown. It was definitely in March, you know, very first few weeks. And I had this realization that I might never put a brush on someone's face again. Like, what if we can't do makeup again? You know? Yeah. And I had to sort of take a step back and go, okay, well, we've got to do this. We have to look forward. We have to be smart and evolve and adapt, right?
Mm.
So I started to think about all the things that I love to do outside of makeup. And one of those is writing, and I love language and words. And I tried to work out how I could turn that into a career one day again, if COVID was if it went on, you know?
Yeah.
And so I ended up just jumping into some online courses straight away and did some writing courses, which were not like creative writing or, you know, script writing or anything like that, but how to have a blog and how to write for an online audience. So that terrified me at first, because I am by nature a fairly private person online, and at that point in time didn't even like knowing that my name was online or photos or anything. So I had to face a lot of fears and hesitations in myself, but created a blog, and that within about a year sort of evolved into the Makeup Refinery, which is a makeup and beauty blog. that is for everybody. It focuses on makeup products from drugstore to professional. There's a section on movie makeup, special effects makeup, and over 40s makeup, which is a niche that's very close to my heart and that I hope to focus on in the future, because I feel very strongly about that element of our population being kind of not neglected, but, you know, our skin starts to change and women just don't know how to change with it. And so I want to help them. So that's something I'm definitely focusing on.
It's that whole thing of you get to a certain point in your life, right, and you figure out what you like to do, whether it's be to your hair or your makeup.
Yeah.
And you kind of stick with it because you're like, this works for me. I'm just going to keep doing it. But then everything fucking changes.
Oh, yes.
And you're like,
Yeah. I know.
Or some people just don't notice that it's not working for them anymore. But yeah, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. And that's so true what you said. And I mean, I love playing with this when we do period shows, or you probably do. And I know you do the same because I think you did this with Emily, and her hair in Oppenheimer was so incredible, by the way. But where women in the past have tended to, they hold on to that lipstick from when they felt their best, whether they acknowledge that or not. So you've got these women, you know, nowadays still using a lipstick from the 70s or 80s or something like that. So that's quite fun to create characters with, but that's going off on a little tangent. So, but back to the 40s thing, it's also, you know, it's what's happening to me right now. And I'm going through these same things where all of a sudden this no makeup is sitting on my face and I actually need to use it on a day-to-day basis when I've had pretty good skin and never had to think about it now. And it's just, it's just, there's no one to hold hands with these women that are just kind of helpless and don't have no clue. And so I'm like, well, I have a little clue, so let me help you and I can educate you and just help these people feel better about themselves and confident facing the cruel world that is out there. But and aside from that aspect of the makeup refinery, I too have a little old podcast that I developed last year, 2023, it's called 5 Minute Face Talk. And that
5 Minute Face Talk. It's amazing.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're meant to be 5 minutes. Most of the time they end up a bit longer because I usually just get carried away with things.
It's okay, lady. No one's going to write you a ticket. It's all right.
No, and I'm not going to get fired. And that's just been super fun and pretty much become my primary. I hate the word content, but it's pretty much my primary source of content for the greater community. That's primarily supported by my email list, which are the people that I know are interested that I talk to each week in my newsletters that I love creating for them, and eventually leading to a couple of online courses that I'll hopefully be putting out this year. And yeah, so like very much like you, just have so much going on that it's very challenging when you're working. Yeah. As I know, and I feel for you right now, but I don't know, I can't stop now. I'm sure you feel the same. It's like you're in it, you're committed, and you want to help people. So that's what I'm trying to do.
That's awesome, Kieran. I will say when the podcast happened, I was like, holy shit. What? Oh my God. I was so proud and I was so excited for you. And I was so, because I just know how fucking scary it is.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
boy.
It's terrifying. I just still remember when Brett Stanley was just, the husband was just like, well, because I was bitching about there not being any podcasts for me to listen to about hair and makeup the industry. And he's like, well, create one. And I was just like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, I can't, no, I can't do that. Like, that's not in my wheelhouse at all.
Yep.
And then what is happening right now? I don't understand what's going on. But so I know what it took for you to like get to that place, and it's so cool and it sounds amazing and I love listening to it. It's awesome.
Aww, I hope it is. It's so hard to know if what you have to say helps anyone because it's just what's in your head and what you're familiar with. So I hope that it helps some people out there, and that I don't sound like a total idiot most of the time, but I love doing it so much. I love editing. I love coming up with the outlines and putting it out there. It's just the time management is becoming the real art right now. And having said that, I'm so grateful to be on a little job currently, but yeah. I just want to keep those podcast episodes going because it's nice to be regular. As you know, I had a little break, probably for about 2 months, February, March, and have just gotten back into it now. And it was weird recording the first episode again last weekend. I was so nervous again. Yeah. Come on, you've come so far.
Yeah, yeah. It's isn't it? You have a little break and you're like, oh, fuck, how do I do this again?
I know.
Yeah.
Just sort of fumbling over my words and things. But, yeah, I love it so much. And it's just so nice to meet new people. I know it sounds cliched, but I did a couple of makeup demos at the IMATS LA trade show back in January, and to meet all these wonderful.
Hang on a minute, stop. Did you just say little demos? Guys,
no.
You need to go and fucking check out what Kieran Jackson did at IMATS because they are not little. They are incredible. They were so beautiful, Kieran.
Don't
do that. I mean, I don't expect you to sit there and go, I did these amazing things. Yeah. But it's just like, I did this little. Yeah, she's, very. It's on your Instagram, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Carry on.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. It's out there.
Carry on.
So, and at that weekend, you know, these they just were so inspiring and pretty much changed my year plan for the company. So at that point, I was going to go all in with women over 40. I have a course ready to go for that. Mm. And there were a few students in particular that just touched my heart. And one of them was a lovely young lady who ended up winning one of the makeup competitions because she came up to me on the Saturday and asked me some airbrushing questions. And she was just really thoughtful and her questions were very smart and considered. Mm. And so I probably spent 10 minutes talking to her. Mm. And then she won the competition the next day. And I was like, that's fantastic. Yay. So I was kind of proud and in that moment just decided that these people need help right now, and especially at such a kind of tumultuous time within the industry. You know, these artists that have come from Ukraine and are now living in LA, and to be at a point where they've just finished studying and now they're looking around just sort of with their hands up, like, now what? Because of the weird sort of standstill that things are at. So that just felt right. So I just sort of switched gears and went all in, released an airbrushing course on the back of IMATS pretty much.
Oh, cool.
And have a hair punching course that's particularly all about eyebrows that I will be releasing soon, I hope. So, so you keep an eye out for that one. And so hopefully to try to teach people some of the different skills that you can have, even if they're things you don't want to do full time, that like myself, you can sort of use as part of your repertoire and be out in the middle of nowhere and get something shipped to you that they didn't put eyebrows in and just know that you can fix it. So, I think that's at the heart of it all for sure.
That's awesome. And so if someone wants to look at your website or sign up for your amazing newsletter and because the newsletter, is that a way that people know when your courses come out and what's available and all that kind of stuff? How do people find all that stuff?
Yeah, well, the newsletter is one way of keeping updated with all my goings on, podcast episode release dates. Mm. I like to treat them as almost like a little lesson each week so that there's something for readers to take away from. It's not just me promoting because it's not what it's about, you know. Yeah. I mean, all the amazing programs you have going on is like you want to inspire people and just comfort them and support them. So that's the heart of everything that I do within the Makeup Refinery. But so there's the newsletter. If you follow me on Instagram at the Makeup Refinery, you can also keep update. If I'm on it, it's a bit spotty these days as well. And then the other way is within the website, which is just themakeuprefinery.com. Mm. I have a lot of free guides and checklists, and all of those will have you subscribed to my newsletter. And then I have a special hair punching checklist that you get. So if you want to grab that at makeuprefinery.com /hairpunching. Mm-hmm. I will send that to you, and then that will keep you updated with the upcoming course as well.
Yay. That's so awesome, Kira. I really enjoyed watching it all kind of grow and take shape. And
Thank you. Well, vice versa for you as well. There's something really comforting. Like, you know, we have our completely different careers going on, and always have had, I think, since you went into hair specifically from your New Zealand days of doing both. But, I know that we've been able to support one another over the years, and it's just so, I love getting your texts where you're like, so when you do this, what do you, and then I can ask you hair questions. I mean, it's so nice. It's like, she understands. And same, so to see Last Looks become the amazing support network it is, and your mentorship program is, I don't think there's anything else like it around these days. And
I mean, honestly, it's all just happened by mistake, to be honest.
Yeah, but some of the best things do, though, you know, always. You have to listen to those mistakes. And I do also, that reminds me with sort of giving words of wisdom to younger folks and people starting out, is that sometimes opportunities come in front of you and then they get taken away and you think that's the end of it all, but sometimes that's the best thing that can happen for you. So just don't ever take anything on too personally, and know that it might just lead to something else better that's right around the corner.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
Now, talking about, because you touched on it very briefly, very early on in the conversation, but what film did you watch and remember thinking, holy shit, the makeup on this is incredible?
Do you mean as a kid or
at
any
so,
time?
I think so, yeah. Let's go first, the first time actually realizing that it's makeup and going, wow, that's incredible. And then what have you watched recently? Let's do two.
Okay. I have to clear my throat for this one. it would have to be Amadeus, first of all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I had an awareness of makeup, but I know my parents were, aside from watching a lot of silly 80s comedy, which I thank both my mum and dad for very much, because you have to be silly, just don't ever lose your silliness either, kiddos. Yeah. But so they would also watch these really interesting smart movies that I had no clue were that way when I was sort of 5 years old. Mm. But seeing Amadeus and watching it with them, and then getting to the old age scenes of Salieri, played by F. Murray Abraham, and just asking my mum, like, who is that? Because that's that man, and not really understanding what was going on, but knowing that I was watching something that was real. It was, I could touch it almost, you know?
Yeah.
And mum sort of explaining, well, that's movie magic, and, you know, that special effect or trick photography, they would call it.
Right.
And so that's how I learnt about effects. Was, I thought it was something called trick photography.
Yeah.
But that is still probably one of my most favorite makeups. I love everything that Dick created, and the beautiful hair work. And I loved his cravat, which was very strategic and smart and covering his neck. It's just beautiful. And I think it still is one of my favorites. Absolutely. I also have to give a shout out to the movie Popeye, Robert Altman's Popeye, which I saw at the drive-in probably when I was 3 or 4 years old.
Oh, wow.
And just really took to the octopus at the end. I just loved it. I loved kind of puppety monsters when I was little. I loved all the, I loved Barkley on Sesame Street and Snuffleupagus, and I loved Oscar the Grouch, and who's the other one? Oh, Animal in the band and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's just all these, I don't know, grotty characters. I mean, because that was kind of who I was, you know. It's just the little grot.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I love that. Yep. So what about recently?
Oh yes. Oh goodness. Recently. Like how recent? A year, 10 years?
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, just I don't know.
Something that's considered contemporary. Like the last makeup that you were just like, what the
Oh, there's so many. I think I remember Kevin and I went and saw the Kong Skull Island. And I mean, this is probably 6 years ago now. I think Bill Corso was the department head, but the tribal makeups in that movie that I think was led by Jason Beard from Australia. Jason, I love Jason. He's awesome. Hi, Jason. I just thought they were so beautiful and completely took me by surprise. I didn't know what was coming. And so they just stood out at the time. And I still love those makeups to this day. But there's just so many. I don't know where to begin. And I feel like you've caught me off guard with that one. You have to come okay. back. I'll that come back.
A, that was a good that was a good answer, though. I like it. So here are my questions that everybody gets. So what one tool or product would you never want to be without?
Oh, again, it's like, is there just one? Oh, I mean, it would have to be Opsite tape, first okay. and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it solves so many challenges and problems. I go everywhere with a roll or four of Opsite tape.
Roll or four.
Yeah.
I like it.
Oh, and also, also my Taranti Leaf spatula. And there's two sizes that I love too, but they're the Italian ones, not the English metal, because they have the different softnesses of metal. The Italian Taranti tools are just beautiful. And I have to tell you what they are so people can get them because they look beautiful. They're soft, they're flexible, but they're strong.
Okay.
And they just are really great as okay. well.
You can give me the link and I can put them in the show notes.
Yes,
so people can check them out.
Definitely will do that.
Amazing. And who would you like to hear on the podcast?
Oh, gosh, the $10 million question.
The $10 million question that I get people to answer and then don't listen to them. There's so many. You know, they just don't get back to me. So what am I going to do about it?
Oh, they're very busy, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
This is quite challenging for me because it's like you could go in different ways. And I love that there was a guest you had on a while ago who I felt like she mixed it up because she was like, you need to talk to the young people, the new, brand new people. And I just thought that was really interesting. But for me, I think I'd have to say I'd love to hear some more guests that are the sort of true backbone of our industry. And there's this group of artists that are now probably in their 50s and 60s that aren't the department heads. They're not the Oscar winners. They're not the people whose names you see left, right, and center at the top of the billboard or what have you.
Yeah.
But they're the inspiration for me. Is it incredible artists like Stephen Anderson or Mark Garbarino or Lenny McDonald that have been around
a
long time, and they're such great storytellers and wealth of knowledge that they all possess. And
hard working too, my God.
As well. But I know Tom will never do this show, so you can't ask Tom because he'll
Tom
just
who?
Say no. Tom Flouts.
You mean he won't do it? Why won't he do it? Oh, my God,
it's
that man's talented.
Yes. Yeah, he's the best. But so I think people of those sort of calibers, I mean, they're just every time I see any or all of them, we always just get talking. And before I know it, I'm just like, okay, and then so what did you do on and just taking notes because their knowledge, each of them as individuals, they're just phenomenal. You have to talk to Steve because his hair background is impeccable and he's so smart and has a very different approach than a lot of people and knows so much technically.
Okay.
Yeah. So all of them, please.
You're like, I'll send you the list.
Yes. There's probably well, about when 20
you,
more.
When, yeah, when you send the list, send me their contact details as well. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so are you ready for a quick fire round of questions in 30
oh
seconds?
Oh, my God, what's this about? All right.
Are you ready?
Sure.
You're like, as ready as I can be.
Yep. Like, I don't like surprises.
I knew you'd be like this.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie.
It's happening. It's happening. It's not hard. Yeah. I promise.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's your social security number. It's your, yeah, no.
Oh, I don't even know that anymore.
You've made room for more important things.
Yes.
Okay, let's go. Fake it till you make it. Do you believe in it?
No.
Do you like doing your own makeup?
Not really.
Do you believe in aliens?
Yes.
Have you seen one?
No.
Not that you know of. Would you rather work days, nights, or splits?
Oh, God, days. Early mornings.
Early mornings? All yes. Right. Do you fold or scrunch?
What are you talking about?
Toilet paper.
Isn't it personal? Like, what is going on here?
What? Fold or scrunch what? Your toilet paper.
What?
You should have said, you know who helped me put some of these questions together? And that wasn't one of them, but Jason Collins. And Jason.
Oh, of course. That's got Collins written all over it.
It wasn't from him, that one. But yeah, you should have.
It's made all the more effective by the clock ticking sound effects, by the way. Thank you.
You're like, oh, how long
That's
have I
hilarious.
Got? But yeah.
I know. Well, do I get like a car now?
Well, you didn't answer the last question, so no car
right.
for you. Sorry.
Okay. All right. I just get a push by a scooter. I think scrunch. I don't know. I'm just wiping my bum.
I love it. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Kieran.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so, I don't know what I did to be on the show. I feel like I've made it now.
I don't want people to feel like that. That's so funny. You know what? The hilarious thing is that, of course, I just don't think about these things until somebody says something like that, or similar to what Howard Berger said to me when I got hold of him a while back to do it. And he's just like, I've been waiting.
Like,
was pretty much just like, I saw that you had Tammy Lane and I was when are you going? When's Jamie Lee going to get hold of me? And I was just like, oh my God, people are actually thinking about this. This is hilarious.
Oh.
So there's never, you know, if you're out there and you're like, why hasn't Jamie Lee gotten hold of me? It's nothing personal, guys. I promise. No. There's so many people and I only have so many. Days in my life.
Oh, you don't have 250,000 days to interview everyone in the worldwide scene.
I'm getting there. Oh. I'm trying to document everybody's stories, but you know, these things take time. So yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm very grateful. I hope, I don't know. I just feel like I'm not very interesting to people, but yeah,
I
so
feel
it's
like
very nice.
90% of people I reach out to say that. And then I have a wonderful conversation with them and I'm thoroughly entertained and people love it. So it's
okay,
good.
Good-o.
Yeah.
Okay, Last Looks crew, thanks for listening. And remember, if you love it, share it. A quick scroll down and you'll find our show notes. Or maybe you'd like to give your support and leave a 5-star review. Come on. Search the Last Looks podcast on Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok, whichever one tickles your fancy. And a massive shout out to the husband, Brett Stanley. Without his patience and tech support, this whole podcast situation simply does not happen. And cheers to Liliana Rose for her fabulous voice acting talents. Okay, Last Looks crew, that's a wrap for me. I don't need to be told twice to get out of here. So bye. I'll catch you on the flip side. That's a wrap, people.